From the Figure Four Online Studios in beautiful Bothell, Washington. Exclusively at WrestlingObserver.com. You're listening to The Brian and Vinny Show with your hosts, Brian Alvarez and Big Vinny V.
And Craig. Hi, everybody. It's the Brian Vinny Show. It is February 21, 2017. Figure4Online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. It is the Tuesday Retro Show. That means we have Raw and Nitro from 19 years ago this week, the middle of the Monday Night Wars. I don't know.
All I know is this Nitro was long.
This Attitude Era sucks.
If you told me this show in Sacramento was still going here in 2017, I would believe you.
You know, I was reading the Observer review, and Dave said it was one of the best Nitro since the show started. I was like, man, he was in a good mood this week. Then I read the review, and he was talking about all this terrible stuff on the show. I was like, what the hell was good about this show? The first part of the show was good. The end was not bad. The middle section was so boring. And I don't even know where to start on Raw.
It wasn't.
No, it was terrible. Craig, it was
pretty bad.
Horrible. Do you realize there were five? Let me say that again. Five different breakup angles here on this show.
That's true. But I noticed if I watch half of it and then walk away, I enjoy it a little bit better.
Yeah, well, I don't do that.
That's what I'm saying.
There should not be a requirement to walk away from a show to enjoy it more. I should be able to watch the show start to finish and not be frustrated.
I'm just handing out a helpful tip.
I actually find it's the opposite. If you take too many breaks during a show, it just stretches out and
makes
it longer. That's part of why this Nitro took forever. Because I sat down, I think it was 2:30 when I started. Should have had plenty of time to get here, leave at 7 and get here. I left right at 7. I was watching the show up till then.
It started at 2:30 and you were still watching it until 7?
That must include Raw.
My God. It better have... It took me a lot... It was rewinding.
It was a 2 hour and 40 minute show that took me about... Well, a lot more than 2 hours and 40 minutes to watch.
It was 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Whatever it was.
No, that's a big difference. Because if it took you from 2 to 7...
Well, it felt like 15 hours and 2 minutes.
To watch a 2 hour and 15 minute show, something went very wrong.
With all of that said, during the Jeff Jarrett and Ken Shamrock match... I had to rewind it 3 times because I kept falling asleep.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I thought Shamrock looked great.
No, it was me. I was tired.
I see.
Well, maybe you should have watched it straight through and you wouldn't have fallen asleep.
It was a second match, Brian.
Listen, I don't know when you took your breaks. Let's begin.
Let's.
Start at the beginning. Retro Raw 248, February 23rd, 1998. Now, I missed last week. They did a Raw Saturday special.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the show you guys reviewed?
Or it was just they had it on Saturday because of the dog show.
Right.
That's the show.
That is the show that you reviewed. Okay. So, this had me very confused for a while. They were talking about 2 nights ago. I thought they were shooting main event angles on Shotgun or something. I don't know what's going on. So the angle was they put the Warriors in a box and they got counted out. So the Warriors were mad. This led to the New Age Outlaws versus the Legion of Doom. By their standards, by what the Legion of Doom especially have been doing on the past several months in the show, it was a pretty good TV match.
It was not bad. But it was not bad after Animal got the hot tag, because the middle segment where Hawk, my favorite, Hawk is the babyface in peril, sitting there selling. It's like when they put Enzo in the ring and he's making a hot tag. It's like, why would you do that? Enzo should be selling. Hawk should be making a hot tag because it's impossible to get sympathy on the Hawk. You just can't. And he's in there every single week selling.
Can you get sympathy on the Animal?
Hawk's gimmick is that he doesn't sell.
Oh, that's true.
And so you're putting him in the ring to sell for 10 minutes?
That's your point.
Very bad.
So they hit the Doomsday Device, but the ref was distracted getting Hawk out of the ring. So Billy hit a belt shot and Road Dogg pinned Animal.
They portrayed it as if Hawk was an idiot for taking too long to get out of the ring.
Mm-hmm. And then we had breakup angle number one.
That's right.
As Hawk and Animal got into a shoving match and then a full-on brawl, Geeks separated them. They did several pull-aparts. And the replays after the break, Then the announcers bemoan this sad, sad state of affairs.
Oh, yeah. I was bemoaning it because they get into a brawl, and it got way less of a reaction than you would expect. Because the fans don't want to see the Road Warriors break up.
No.
They're the Road Warriors.
Yes.
And I'm sure Vince Russo thought, you know what? These damn Road Warriors, they're old. They're just out there every week doing matches. Vince, let's break them up.
Not to mention,
Vince said, God damn, let's try it. And of course, it was a bad idea.
It was a horrible idea. There's a tag team breakup on the other show that has been teased and built up to for months.
Right.
So we totally understand it. The gimmick of this breakup was the team has been losing for a while, and now they're fighting. So yeah. You as a fan have no reason to care about either man.
No, who's supposed to be the babyface here?
Don't know.
I mean, obviously, Hawk.
Why?
Because he's always the babyface in peril. So clearly, they're just going to continue on with that.
Leave it to the Vinces to break up the legendary Road Warriors. Seriously.
Yeah. Ken Shamrock versus Jeff Jarrett. Shamrock looked like a total killing machine early, which I guess he was. The best part is he goes to suplex Jarrett into the ring, and Cornette trips him. So Jarrett falls on top. But A, Shamrock kicks out anyway, even with Cornette holding his foot down, and B, he then drags Cornette into the ring to kill him. And Jarrett cut him off. There was no Cornette murder. Ref gets bumped. Cornette goes to hit Shamrock with a tennis racket. He hits Jarrett instead. Shamrock hooks the ankle lock. Ref recovers and stops the match because Jarrett is, in fact, unconscious. Shamrock's music played for a long time, and I never realized this, but towards the end there, it has a cowbell solo.
Hey, let's talk about the bigger issue here, that Ken Shamrock gets the win via submission, and then he starts going after the ref in fury and anger.
I don't get it.
The hell was he mad about?
I don't know.
And then Jim Ross says, a tactical error. This was on the part of, I guess, Cornette. But I bring it up because in the first match, when the Road Warriors had their finish, Jim Ross also said it was a tactical error. So there are a lot of tactical errors here on this show. This is, in fact, the second teased breakup so far here on the show.
Well, I don't think it's teased. They were interviewing Jared as he walked up the ramp, and he outright said, I think it's time Cornette and I go our separate ways.
That's right.
So that is two breakups in two segments.
Two matches, two breakups, two tactical errors.
I love it when Jimmy Cornette hits the guy with the tennis racket. Of course, it's just a handle with a cover. And it's very clear that it's that because the top part of the round portion of the racket folds over in half. Now, either he swung this racket with such force that it broke the racket, or this thing is a gimmick.
I think he swung it with such force that he broke the racket on Jeff Jarrett's head. That's my theory.
It was very hot in the building. It melted like butter. They have those lights, you know. Jerry Lawler tried to interview Animal. Animal screamed he didn't have a brother, and Hawk ran in and said, I don't know anything about brothers, and they brawled again. DOA and Truth Commission.
Dude, they're trying so hard to lose this war.
How did they survive?
I mean,
DOA and Truth Commission?
Do they actually go on the Monday Night Wars documentary on WWE Network and talk about how we actively try to lose the wrestling war all through 97 and early 98 by constantly putting the DOA and the Truth Commission on television in wrestling matches? Not only do they have a hideous match, Kurgan is impossibly bad. He is so bad that Braun Strowman, who has, in fact, he has improved, but let's not fool ourselves. He was clumsy, except for his kip-up, and he got blown up, and they blew spots in a boring match with the Big Show on Monday until the very end. He looked like the Undertaker in his prime next to Kurgan. Kurgan beats up the sniper, I think. May have been a recon. It doesn't matter. Recon begs him to stop. The Jackal laughs. This is after the match because we had,
May I just...
No, this was the third breakup angle in a row. Three!
Yes.
We've had three segments on the show, and all three segments have had a breakup angle. How?
I don't know.
Did they break up?
Well, it sure looked that way to me.
Didn't get along.
They all left together.
One guy dragged another guy out by his head. Okay, that seems like a breakup to me. Yeah, he dragged his body out. That's not leaving together.
The claw hold is to put a man out. and he was dragging him up the ramp, and the other guy was going, "Stop! Oh God!" Ah! Ineffective claw hold.
I was going to read my notes here from the claw hold to the end of this segment. First of all, let's not gloss over this. This match was awful. This brawl where they're all falling all over each other before Kurgan tagged in is a horrible match. So he went to the claw hold. Then I wrote, "The horrible brawl continued after the match. Then Jackal yelled at Recon and Sniper for God knows what reason. He slapped Sniper, who went after him. So Kurgan went after Sniper. Recon was upset. Jackal slapped Recon. Recon was mad, then apologized. This all went on for a while, and thank God they left. Truth Commission is truly one of the worst factions of all time."
Fucking the Truth Commission? What about DOA?
They're not very good.
What about any of the factions on this show? Oh, really? What if I'm just left and went to WCW?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't fight.
To join, I might add, a much better faction.
Fight about leaving?
There's no breakup.
We don't know that. It just went on television.
I'm out of here, prick.
This was horrible. It's terrible. And keep in mind, they won and broke up.
Oh, yeah.
It's not even like earlier where, well, the first match, the team lost and broke up. Then the second match, the guy lost and broke up. This time, they won and they still broke up. This show sucks. Okay, the Attitude Era sucks, everybody. I don't care what you remember from when you were a child. It sucks. And if you don't believe me, go back and watch it. Hopefully, it gets better here soon.
DX did a promo from Sean's house in San Antonio. It's Sean, Hunter, China, and a mystery blonde who Sean smooches at one point.
Mm-hmm. It's not Whisper.
God.
She was working.
I know.
It's funny. There are so many DX segments that I just vividly remember, and then there are segments like this that I just have no memory of.
Right.
I can only presume that, yeah, some of them were good, and some of them were boring.
This was a
DX segment where Hunter rambled on about ratings, Nielsen's, and must-see TV. Who in the hell could possibly care that Sean guaranteed he'd wrestle at Mania?
They noted Austin had stunned China and she was fine. And said next week they're going to Cleveland. Owen Hart, Steve Austin, and Mike Tyson would be there and they're going to take them all out in one shot. And they promised an X-rated WrestleMania.
Can't wait. This show should have been X-rated. Not for anything involving pornography.
It was obscene.
It's an obscene program that nobody should watch.
Taka Michinoku versus Barry Windham.
Okay. I actually have something positive to say.
Okay.
But it's not about this show. A couple weeks ago, last week, I was talking about this light heavyweight division is exactly like the current cruiserweight division.
Oh, no.
Exactly. It is absolutely identical. You could just switch the talent and there would be no difference between the 1998 light heavyweight division and today's cruiserweight division. I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Vince actually learned one thing in 19 years, and that is if you're going to have a light heavyweight division or a cruiserweight division, do not mix them with the heavyweights. Not one time, not a single time, except the Royal Rumble. That was the one exception. When Jack Gallagher got into the Royal Rumble and jumped off with his umbrella or whatever. That's the one exception. But the cruiserweights never wrestle the heavyweights, ever. This match right here, Taka Michinoku and Barry Windham. What in the world was the idea outside of, I'm sick of this division and let's kill it tonight on this show? Because that's what they did here.
They killed it twice.
They killed this division absolutely dead.
I would say it was just one long murder.
Okay.
Because they were going on and on about how this is not a fair fight. Taka's barely 200 pounds soaking wet.
With multiple assailants, they killed
yes.
him.
And keep
yes.
in mind, this was back when they pumped up everybody's weight. I mean, Taka was probably 160 pounds.
Sure.
He literally was probably half the weight of Barry Windham.
Very close.
In this match. And they have a goofy match. Kane shows up, destroys Taka. Like, seriously, if there's a light heavyweight match next week, I will be stunned. Because there's no point. It's dead.
They killed him start to finish here. The only thing I can say good about this is that the performances of Taka Michinoku and Barry Windham were great. They both looked great. Now, one of them looked greater because he was positioned
in mass.
It was, well, yes. But the whole thing was set up. I actually thought because it would be Barry beat him and beat him and beat him. Taka hit one flip and then Barry beat him and beat him and beat him. And I thought Taka was going to get like a fluke roll up or something. Silly me. I should have known better. No, Barry killed him, hit all his moves, made the cover, was about to win, when an even bigger guy came out to do more murder. And out came Kane, and they killed Taka.
Like, seriously, what in the world were they thinking with this segment?
To ensure no one ever cared about Taka Michinoku ever again.
I mean, did they think...
It had to be suicide. We gotta sabotage.
We gotta turn this Kane into a bully by beating up this small man. They could have done that without this stupid match. There was no point to this match.
By the way, not only did they talk about how Taka was very small and puny and weak, Cornette was also to make sure he was stupid. Because he was illiterate and couldn't speak English or read a contract. That's right. That's how they got in a match with Barry Windham.
That's right.
Yeah, they buried him start to finish. And then Bearer cuts a promo calling out Steve Austin to come face Kane next week. Michael Cole tried to interview the Outlaws as they left the building.
God. Road Dogg is now doing the gimmick where he is filming.
He's camcordering everything.
Stole Six's gimmick.
He also had the DX t-shirt on.
Right.
And Road Dogg is a good promo. And he's a pretty good worker. He actually totally outshone Brad Armstrong on this particular evening here. He totally lost his train of thought during this promo. He starts rambling and just messing everything up. And then he just admits, well, I started drinking a while ago.
I'm half drunk.
And then Charlie and Cactus show up.
Right.
Chainsaw Charlie is wielding a chainsaw. And Cactus Jack is wielding a bat, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
They're destroying the car.
Right.
Cactus is smashing in the windows. Chainsaw Charlie is trying to cut the car in half with a chainsaw.
Yes. He's not attacking the glass. He's going after the frame.
So they're about to kill these two men who are in the car. And as God is my witness, Billy Gunn opens the door. There's a dude there with a chainsaw. Billy kicks him in the stomach and knocks him down, and then they drive away.
With the smashed windshield. How he...
It was Road Dogg, but everything else that was right.
Dude, he beat up a man with a chainsaw.
Basically,
who was trying to kill him while he was locked in a car.
Yeah.
Well, they killed Cactus and Chainsaw here.
Really, they just killed the chainsaw.
Oh, my God.
Well, it doesn't have a blade on it anyway.
Another terrible segment.
It was bad because, like, there were sparks flying, and, like, he wasn't anywhere near the car with the blade.
Yeah, but Craig, he used to come down and swing the chainsaw in the air, and there'd be sparks. It's just a bad chainsaw.
I see.
It needs to be recalled.
Or oiled.
This was stupid.
This was so unbelievably
Everything
stupid.
About Chainsaw Charlie was stupid. They promised us we would get Goldust's most outrageous character yet. And it was Goldust doing an impression of his dad. Am I the only one who thought this impression was shockingly bad?
It was horrible.
You know how they say you end up much like your father?
Yeah.
Fail.
Clearly not. So we had clips of Dusty and Sapphire. And then Goldust came out in the polka dots with a big padded belly.
Don't forget the gig marks.
The gig marks on his forehead and arm were actually great.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Nice touch.
That was the best part of the whole
thing. They were so great that when I first saw him, I was like, God, I'd forgotten that Dustin did so much gigging early in his career. And then I went, wait a second. That's fake. They put noodles on his arms.
Yes. So, it's a dumb thing to do anyway. Like, people are going to hate him because he's being Dusty Rhodes, whatever. But Jim Ross was sure to let us all know, we spoke to Dusty on the phone today, and he had a good laugh about this.
Oh, yeah, you called Dusty in WCW and said, we're going to make fun of you tonight. What do you think? Very skeptical.
Lawler said, I forget what he said, but he used the term, internet geeks.
Mm-hmm.
Quote.
Oh, really?
Internet geeks.
Yes, he did.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, speaking of internet geeks, that would be Vince Russo. This was such a Vince Russo segment. Because
yes,
not only did they do Dustin dressed as Dusty doing his spots with Bradshaw, but the story is Dustin wanted Bradshaw to sell for him.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted him to, quote, take bumps for him.
Yeah.
And he wanted him to let Bradshaw beat him up. Or let... He wanted
let
Bradshaw to let
up,
him
said,
beat...
Yeah.
What the fuck ever. It's so
he
stupid.
He said all of this over the house mic.
Yes.
Cutting a promo. You should be bumping all over the place. Bradshaw refused. The only thing that was good about this, they did some comedy early.
Please tell me what was good about this.
The exact finish where...
Okay, that was good.
Dustin gets beat up and beat up and beat up. Then he ducks like one clothesline. He does the flip-flop and fly spot, but Bradshaw no-sells everything. And then when it's time for the big elbow, Bradshaw just clotheslines him out of his boots and pins him.
That was a good finish.
That was a good finish.
I'll give him that.
That may have been the best part of the show.
One subtle thing. There was a couple times where Bradshaw kicked him in the head, and Dustin took his forefinger and thumb and ran it across his head like he was gigging. This happened numerous times.
That's funny.
Craig, you're an internet geek. That's what they're referring to here, enjoying this horrible segment here.
How dare I find some joy in this world?
Dude, on this show, how dare you?
I tried.
Cole tried to interview Goldust, who said, Stardust cannot compare to Goldust. I'm hanging these tights up.
Dude, no one's paying us to lie to him.
Does that sound like another breakup angle, by the way? He broke up with
Dusty?
Yes.
May as well have been.
Kevin Kelly tried to interview Hawk backstage. Hawk had nothing to say. Steve Blackman versus The Rock.
Another breakup angle.
Well, before we get to that, first off, was it me or did Rock throw the worst punches in wrestling history on the show? Have I just never noticed, or were they particularly bad this week?
I was watching this thinking, you know, here in 1998, Rock and Blackman are obviously at the opposite end of the charisma spectrum. But as far as actual wrestling goes, Blackman may be better.
On this day, he was better.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the most notable thing about this match. So Blackman is like a ninja. And he comes out and he's got nunchucks. And he spins them around and he does a big...
A glow in the dark.
Thing, mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is where Naomi got her gimmick.
Exactly.
She stole it from Steve Blackman.
So there's interference from the Nation and everything like that. And finally the ref is distracted and D'Lo grabs the nunchucks. And Rock says, give me them nunchucks. And D'Lo says, all right. And he mimes, I'm going to throw them to you. He didn't throw them to him yet. He just mimes, I'm going to throw them to you. Get ready. So Rock gets like so close, they could just hand him over. But they've got to throw him. So D'Lo throws them high into the air. And of course, they go over the Rock's head. And Steve Blackman grabs his nunchucks. These are a weapon.
Yeah.
Now, I always thought that you grab one end.
Sure.
And you swing them and you strike a man with the other end. Yes. Am I wrong about this?
You pummel them with the other end.
I have seen Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles many times. That's how it works.
Okay. Blackman grabs the nunchucks. He has his weapon. It's not like Rock got them and didn't know what to do with them.
Right.
Blackman's got his own weapon that he does a kata with at the beginning of every match. He proceeds to place both handles together, and then he leaps high in the air and does a double sledge with the nunchucks to the Rock's back. Yes.
Innovative.
That was the stupidest thing I've seen in my whole life watching wrestling. Steve Blackman's utilization of his own weapon. He jumped in the air and did a double sledge to the Rock. Now, far be it from me to critique the guy. It worked. He pinned the Rock. Steve Blackman has a win over The Rock.
Yes. Now, did you mention there was about 14 interference spots before this, and Blackman could not win, despite all this distraction that Farouk was doing. So the Nation's all mad. They're all yelling at each other, and D'Lo puts the heat square on Farouk, saying, he told me to do it. That's a quote. So Rock demands Farouk get in the ring. And Rock explains, you distracted the ref, I got hit, and I got pinned 1, 2, 3. And Farouk listens to him, hears him out, and says, you got pinned 1, 2, 3. And he snaps his fingers and says, shit. And he leaves.
I thought he said damn.
He did.
Did he?
Yes.
I was supposed to be said shit.
No.
Well, it's the same thing.
Either way, the point is
he mocked the man.
Yes, and then he just walked away.
The Rock got all big-eyed.
Yes.
All googly-eyed.
And everyone left with Farouk, leaving The Rock alone in the ring.
So, in fact, we did get our fourth dissension angle on the same show.
More to come.
Kevin Kelly interviewed Luna backstage. She explained she had not gone out with Goldust earlier because she was waiting to rearrange Sable's face. If you've ever seen a Luna promo, she was very creepy and growly and scary, and it must have hurt to talk like this.
Gargles with razor blades.
It was silly.
She was the chick from Ghostbusters after Zool got a hold of her.
Basically, yeah.
Hmm.
They showed Kane beating Vader in No Way Out and then hitting him with a wrench after the match so Vader could get surgery. The Rock and Roll Express were in the ring to defend the NWA Tag Team titles.
NWA North American Tag Team titles.
NWA North American Tag Team titles. So the NWA champions defending the NWA titles in an NWA match with NWA rules thought we should have an NWA ref.
This was last week, Vince.
This is what happened here.
Well, I mean, they've done this.
They did this last week.
Well, there's an angle that on the show that I missed where an NWA ref called for the DQ for the over-the-rope rule.
Tommy Young.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, Tommy Young. Fist pump. Because Tommy Young is awesome. Tommy Young was awesome. So, here, Sarge comes out and says, no, you're not going to be ref this match. Even though, as noted, it's all NWA stuff anyway. It's just happening in a WWF ring. So, this is bullshit. This is complete bullshit.
Well, he did that because Tommy Young has been favoring the NWA wrestlers. So he got a biased WWE referee.
On this match, on the clip I saw that they showed to set that up, the ref made the right call. The Headbangers were stupid and broke the NWA rules and deserved to lose.
Well, they are stupid. I won't deny that.
So we got the Rock and Roll Express versus the Headbangers.
Let's talk about the bigger story. The Headbangers are getting a shot at the NWA North American Tag Team titles.
Yeah.
Again. Because they got one last week as well.
Which they lost because they're stupid.
Right.
So, as I expected, the Rock and Roll Express are a tremendous heel tag team. Bumbling around like fools, teasing, fighting, then hugging. And they both get dropped by the Headbangers, and Cornette gets dropped by the Headbangers.
You know what's funny about this that people will be furious about, but I'm going to say it anyway because it's true. Do you know who the Rock and Roll Express reminded me of in this match?
Oh, no.
They were the Young Bucks. It's actually vice versa. If you ever watch a Young Bucks match, aside from all the flipping and everything like that, their gimmick is they always screw up and hit each other.
I see.
They screw up and they super kick each other. They screw up and bonk into each other. They screw up and dive onto each other. They do it in every single match. That's all the Rock and Roll Express here did as a heel tag team. They constantly bonked into each other, punched each other, screwed up, and sure enough, for the fifth time on this show, we had dissension between a team and a teased breakup.
Well, they got back together. They're working over whichever headbanger this was. And the setup for the hot tag would be, we'll miss the double dropkick. We'll go to throw a double dropkick, but we won't hit you. All you have to do is get out of the way. This was too much for Headbanger A to pull off convincingly.
He couldn't just grab the ropes and hold on?
Step back?
No.
No, the Express jumped, and he just took a bump, and I wasn't sure at first if this is supposed to be a missed dropkick or not.
It's like he stumbled back.
Do you realize?
It's like he sucked.
Do you realize?
Well, there's that.
His job here was to not be kicked, and he fucked it up.
They may be worse.
The worst team I've ever seen.
May be worse than Pietrov.
They're the worst tag team I've ever seen. He's still the worst guy. Anyway, Gibson got thrown over the top rope. The WWF referee refused to call for the DQ. So Cornette whacked a Headbanger with his tennis racket, but the Headbanger fell on top of Morton, pinned him to win the match and the titles. The Headbangers pinned the Rock and Roll Express. This is a bigger travesty than Steve Blackman pinning the Rock.
And they're now the NWA North American Tag Team Champions. The Headbangers.
What a win, by the way. They were unconscious at the point of victory.
Yeah, that's their gimmick. They're just...
Their gimmick... See, the gimmick is that they're the worst tag team of all time, but then they actually are the worst tag team of all time, too.
So it's the best gimmick in wrestling history.
The most appropriate.
I see.
There is no better candidate to be the worst tag team of all time than the worst tag team of all time. They announced that Pete Rose would be at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Didn't say what he'd be doing.
Getting tombstoned.
Thanks for what was implied. We had the Steve Austin Road to WrestleMania video package. Several minutes of Austin cursing and stomping and stunnering people. And then DX tied him in the ropes and humiliated him on Raw. Then he went back in time to show his neck injury in the comeback. Then he cut a promo saying he was going to put people on the list. Now you know where Chris Jericho got that idea. Our main event was Mark Merrow versus Owen Hart. Merrow came out with Sable, but then ordered her to the back.
You know, I mention it every week, but Owen Hart, super nice human being, the worst babyface. He's horrible as a babyface.
He's up there.
He's just a guy that should have been a career heel. Some guys are just better heels than babyfaces, and vice versa. And he was a horrible babyface.
I like when Jim Ross, the babyface announcer, said with sincerity, he's the most competitive European champion of all time.
Oh, yeah?
Let's review. Shawn wins the inaugural title, never defends it, drops in a joke match to Hunter, who never defends it, and then is stripped of the title and it's given to Owen, who had to pin Goldust for it.
Well, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
It is true. Just like Kevin Owens was the longest reigning Universal Champion all time.
Yeah. So, Sable comes back out after all of this.
Thank God.
In the middle of this match, this is the alleged main event, and it's a nothing match.
A total nothing match.
And Mero turns to the ref, looks him in the eye, the ref looks him in the eye back, and Mero shoves him down.
Right. Okay.
Mero was winning on him.
Now listen. Listen. I was watching this, and it was so boring, and I zoned out. And the next thing I know, Owen Hart has Mark Mero in the sharpshooter. The referee looks at them, and he rings a bell. And I thought, I can't believe that, number one, first off, I can't believe that we got a clean finish here in the main event.
Oh,
and number two,
wrong.
That it was such a boring main event. But you know what? At least we got a clean finish. Then I was like, wait. Because they ring the bell and they announce it. It was a DQ. And I thought, what? I go back, and as you noted, Mero shoved the ref. Owen puts Mero in the sharpshooter. Mero has no escape. He's in the middle of the ring. He's trapped. The referee rings the bell, disqualifies Mark Mero. And I was like,
why?
You couldn't just have this fucking guy submit.
It's not like Mero was the champion and had to retain via DQ.
No.
Owen was the champion. He was winning either way. What does it matter if he wins by DQ or submission?
The show was so bad.
And it's not like Mero saved face. He was in the sharpshooter.
Yeah, he was trapped anyway.
He couldn't get out is the whole point.
God.
Like, just give someone on this show a win clean. Please. They couldn't do it.
I gotta admit, I did not realize the horrendous nature of this show until just now.
Oh, I realized it watching it.
I was numb watching it.
I could not believe my eyes as I watched this show, and I thought back, this is the Attitude Era that everybody raves about. The show is beyond horrible. And it had a big pull apart.
Luna went after Sable. Sable went after Luna. Goldust and Mero were among the geeks trying to separate them. Goldust, in this melee, put his hands on Sable. Mero thinks to himself, hey, she's my property, so he lays a beating on Goldust. And that's how it ended.
So mind-blowing, because as we get into Nitro here, I liked the first hour or so of Nitro. And then there was a string of one, nothing happening, boring match after another. And I always watch Nitro first. So as I'm watching these matches, and I'm struggling with consciousness, trying desperately not to fall asleep, I'm thinking, how in the world is everyone not switching to Raw right now? Like, how? Then I watch Raw, and it's like, each side is actively trying to lose this war.
Wheel of Fortune must have been awesome this time. Their ratings just went through the roof.
I mean, all people talk about is the Monday Night War, and both sides trying to beat the other side. I'm watching this Monday Night War thing, and both sides are actively trying to lose. And it's like, who can fuck it up the most and end up losing this war?
And
the answer was WCW.
Yes.
That's exactly what happened. Let's not fool ourselves. The WWE story is, well, we were just better. No, they were way worse. That's why you won. Because this is not good right now. Let's talk about this Nitro.
Deep breath. Okay.
Hey, it started out great.
Nitro number 128, also February 23rd, 1998. So at Super Brawl, the night before, Scott Steiner had done the big turn, and Turner and his brother Rick. So we got reactions from DDP, Booker T, Ric Flair, and Bret Hart talking about how sad and tragic this was. The best of them all was Bret, who noted, nobody could understand this situation better than him. And it was going to hurt a lot of people, and that's a real shame. Because Bret had been through a feud with his brother before.
That's right.
So it made sense. The announcers, meanwhile, they're not happy that Scott Steiner turned on his brother, but they are happy that Sting has beaten Hulk Hogan at Super Brawl to once again be the undisputed champion.
That's right. He's the champion again after all this rigmarole.
Mm-hmm.
After they totally took all possible steam off of Sting. Now he's the champion.
Yep.
Way to go.
They cut him off of the pass over and over and over again. So Gene tries to interview Rick Steiner backstage.
It seriously is like WWE nowadays, where they beat a guy and beat a guy and beat a guy and beat a guy and beat a guy. Then they give him the title.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, I can't figure out why he's not over.
Yeah.
Why don't we have a new John Cena?
Rick Steiner had nothing to say. So Lex Luger comes out. Then the NWO music plays. Then Lex cuts a promo. Live TV. He begins by congratulating his buddy Sting on his championship win. But he is more upset that is Rick Steiner, who he called his best friend, is devastated about what happened last night. So for 10 years, I've been training and traveling all over the world with the Steiners. He knows him very well, and he wants to beat some sense into Scott. So he challenges Scott to a fight. Then there's like a minute of dead TV as Lex is posing for the fans. The announcer is just killing time. And finally, the NWO music plays again. And out comes Kurt Hennig. Kurt and Lex wrestle for a minute or two. And then Scott Steiner runs into the crowd, debuting the big Papa Pump look with the short blonde hair and the sunglasses. And he tried to do some stuff with the sunglasses and cut his own face. Very big Papa Pump thing to do.
I think it happened when he did that side suplex to Lex.
When he suplexed Lex onto his own forehead.
Let's right. talk about this suplex. He grabs Lex for an exploder.
Right.
You guys know what an airplane is?
Sure.
Okay. Let me explain for those that don't. So it's got these two wings, right? You know what banking means?
Yeah.
I'm doing the thing with my hand right now. So look, if an airplane's going to turn,
yeah,
one is. Side goes up and the other side goes down,
sure.
and it banks, yeah. okay? Papa Pump is going to suplex Luger and his legs are going up. All the fucking guy has to do is bring his head down and he'll flip over.
Right.
But his legs go up and Luger's like, I will not lower my upper body. And he keeps it stable and he lands right in his fucking face.
Yeah.
I thought he was dead.
I have not seen the incident where Kurt Angle originally broke his neck, but I've read about it from his own book, where he said he's being taken over and attempted to block it with his face.
Bad idea.
This is what happened to Lex Luger here. So, let's see. Lex survived. He hits the bionic elbow and the power slam. Then Buff Bagwell runs out and attacks him. Hennig and Rude disappeared. Rick Steiner appears, lays out Bagwell, but before he can do anything to Scott, the rest of the NWO comes out, including Bryan Adams, who apparently was there last week.
Mm-hmm.
And the Barbarian in a dress shirt.
Well, not, he yes. came out later, but yes.
I'm ahead of myself.
The NWO comes out.
This is very important.
Sting descends from the ceiling and chases the NWO away. Only at this point, only when the danger is clear, do the troops come in. So way to go, WCW guys. Way to save the day. What perfect timing. And yes, Barbarian is wearing a shirt and tie.
You know... We always talk about how, isn't it so weird that all of these shows we talk about from dozens of years ago sometimes, they all tie together. I don't know what show it was, but I'm positive the first day that Samoa Joe came out in a suit to do the contract signing, I did not want to see Joe in that suit. I know on one of these shows I mentioned, can you imagine Meng or the Barbarian coming out in a suit? Here's the Barbarian in a dress shirt and a tie. Gimmick dead. He ain't a barbarian. He's a fella that plays
a
barbarian.
Fashion model.
It's ridiculous.
By the way, Vinny,
mm.
last week we reviewed Meng versus the Barbarian.
Dude, you got to go back.
About that.
You must go back and watch this
You've
match.
Got to see this.
Actually, speaking of things I missed, on Raw during the Road Warriors video, there was a clip of them doing the Doomsday Device to the Rock and Roll Express. Was that on the show I missed?
I don't think so.
Mm-mm.
Hmm. Maybe it was a post-match thing or something.
It might have happened in the NWA.
I just remember thinking, I can't believe these two teams never wrestled, and then they're in every segment each week, still never wrestling.
That's true.
So
all I know is Benoit and Raven had a match on this show that I'm afraid was better than Meng versus Barbarian. But aside from that match, nothing was better than Meng and Barbarian last week.
Okay.
It was the best match.
Well, let's start with what was not the best match.
Has there ever been a worse wrestler than Hammer?
Yes.
Besides the obvious we talked about of late.
He was the worst wrestler on this show.
Why did they wear the exact same gear?
That was the other thing I thought of. Two big, bleach, blonde, clumsy dudes in jeans and black tops out there wrestling.
Yes. It was like the...
It was like Hammer and his little brother.
Right. Yeah, it was eerie.
And neither...
Well, the little brother won.
Neither of these guys is terribly graceful. They were clunking and lumbering all over the place. And Page eventually won with the Diamond Cutter.
And got his way into the Hall of Fame.
For this match. I hope he thanks Hammer. The Flock attacked. Benoit made the save. A limousine arrived. Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff step out, but they see the camera, and they tell whoever's in the back seat, "Stay here, brother." Now, as I read these words out loud here, I thought, hey, we never found out who was in the limo. And then I thought, wait, yes, we did. It was just so lame, I forgot.
We sure did.
It was so lame, I forgot it was the reveal.
It was so lame, the announcers didn't know who it was.
No. So Bischoff and Hogan made the long, long, long walk down to the ring. Along the way, they walked through a pile of random soda bottles that was laying in the middle of the walkway. Vincent ran up and whispered in their ear, and then they were really mad. So they get to the ring for a promo. Eric Bischoff, the guy in his late 40s by this point, I think. Maybe mid-40s.
43.
Mid-40s. Wearing the backwards baseball cap like a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
Goofy. So Hogan's promo was that he beat Sting again, just like he always had. It's all Nick Patrick's fault. He didn't have the belt.
Hey, let's talk about the most important thing he said. He claimed that he got hit at the show.
The crowbar.
By a 10-foot-long crowbar.
We need to watch this show now. I need to see Randy Savage hitting Hulk Hogan with a 10-foot crowbar.
So then, later, Tony Schiavone tries to claim that what Hogan actually meant was it was a 10-pound crowbar.
Ah.
But then Tony says, hey, even that's ridiculous.
That's a huge crowbar.
Oh, God. So Hogan says Scott Hall's going to wrestle Sting tonight. He's finally getting his title shot after winning World War III. He's going to bring the belt home to the family. And then he challenges Savage to a cage match that's uncensored. And Savage appears in the crowd and says, okay. Kaz Hayashi versus Ultimo Dragon.
I forgot all about Kaz Hayashi until I watched this.
This match was okay, but I was not blown away by it.
It was
an acceptable professional wrestling match.
That's fair.
With two professional wrestlers.
I was blown away by how skinny Kaz Hayashi was and how his gear emphasized that. When you have skinny legs and no ass, don't get the tights that go halfway up your torso. It just makes your ass look flatter. Now you can move. Did a bunch of cool flips and cool moves, and they did suplexes and kicks and dives, and all, it was all cool. And I did love the finish here. Dragon does the top rope Rana and the Dragon Sleeper, which is his combo that always wins. Kaz escapes the sleeper with like one kick. So Dragon's pissed off, kicks him a few more times, puts the sleeper back on and wins.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yep, it was great.
We had an entire segment devoted to Gene Okerlund plugging the hotline. Didn't interview anyone, didn't plug anything, just call her now. Saw a bunch of total losers having a Nitro party.
Never gets old. It never gets old.
They've been doing this for like at least 6 months.
At least.
There's been one party where I thought, that looks cool. I would like to go to that one.
You know what's funny is you got to think about how many videotapes they got sent in.
Jeez.
And they had so many to choose from. Like, I'm sure they had a guy whose job was to watch all these damn videos.
Oh, God.
And he was probably just told, can you find one that's cool? And this is the best they could come up with every week. Think about the ones they didn't put on television. That's what I'd like to see. If they could put those on the WWE Network in the vault.
Oh.
Nitro
the
party.
The worst Nitro parties?
No, just Nitro Party VHS. Just put the date on them and throw them in their entirety on the WWE Network. It'd be amazing.
Oh, God.
So, Benoit and Raven.
Why don't they use all my best ideas? I mean, come on. How much would that cost to digitize that and put it on the network?
I don't have an answer.
I'd watch it. I'd review it every week with Tom. Just pick a random Nitro Party video and watch it.
So, as noted, Benoit, very good at pro wrestling.
Dude. Chris Benoit, on this night, I was convinced was the best wrestler who's ever lived on the planet Earth. He just destroyed Raven. And to Raven's credit, boy, did that guy take a beating. He took one of those beatings where you could just tell he was counting down the minutes till this match was over. It just got chopped again and just beaten. It was great.
Just imagine what you had coming down the line. So it's Raven's rules, so they're using chairs blatantly in front of the referee. A bunch of them over and over again.
This drove me crazy.
So, in the middle of all this, let's see. Benoit hits the Rolling Germans. The ref counts one. The ref counts two. Raven kicks out. The ref holds up two. The bell rings.
Right.
So I'm already confused. Was this a pinfall or not?
No, Kidman was supposed to hit the ring, but he was late, and Raven kicked out because he wasn't supposed to be pinned, so, and the ref called for the bell.
So
it was supposed to be a run-in DQ.
In this Raven's rules
they
match.
They booked a DQ and an ODQ match.
Yes.
That is...
In this Raven's rules match, you can hit each other with chairs.
It's called The Death of WCW.
But you cannot run in.
This was the least of their problems. Yes, a DQ and a no-DQ match.
So the Flock attacks. Paige goes to make the save.
Benoit sent Kidman into orbit, and Kidman sold it so great.
The Flock attacks one at a time, like any good martial arts villain. And yes, Benoit laid them out one at a time until finally getting overwhelmed. And it was a backdrop to the sky, as I recall. But finally, Paige makes the save. And in the melee, Benoit punches Paige one time. So now Paige doesn't know if he can trust Benoit. So it comes down to Benoit and Raven and Paige having a three-way brawl, which sounds really stupid. They pulled it off.
Yeah, and they're going to have a three-way match.
I'm sure they are. But just punch the guy to your right, punch the guy to the left, repeat, and somehow it all looked cool. You recall that in past Nitro reviews, I would report every time the Nitro girls came out and danced. And then after a while, I got old and I stopped.
We shouted you down.
Yes. The Nitro girls came out in this segment, and they probably danced, but I didn't notice. All I noticed was that they were bending over in leather pants over and over again.
That sounds like dancing to me.
I'm a fan of the leather.
I was on this night, that's for sure. It was great. Chris Jericho versus Lenny Lane.
This was not great.
So Jericho unmasked Hoovy the night before. This is a big moment. But at no point on the show did they show Hoovy without his mask on.
Nope.
They mentioned his name.
No, nothing. Because back then, all you youngsters listening right now, you had to buy this match on pay-per-view. And if you missed it, there was a replay on Tuesday. So they didn't want you to see Hoovy's face because they thought maybe you'd buy the replay and spend $30 to see him get unmasked.
So Jericho does a promo wearing the mask. Says he is the face that 4 million people have tuned in to see. Says the name of the show will be changed to Monday Night Jericho. And I was watching this, all I could think was, this dude's still a main eventer. I mean, not that he was a main eventer here, but he was popular. And it's 2 decades later. This guy is amazing. Like, it really hit me watching this. Not like I haven't known for the past year. But yes, Chris Jericho's longevity is astounding.
Barely ever got hurt.
Barely ever got hurt.
Until he went on Dancing with the Stars.
So this match was not very good. Lenny Lane was not Chris Jericho. He hit what Tony Schiavone had no choice but to call a glancing blow of a dropkick. Jericho did all he could to make this guy look great. Lenny used a skull-crushing finale. He also does that move better than The Miz. And finally, Jericho hooked him in the Boston Crab and won. We had what had to be at least 3 straight minutes of dead TV, the announcers just killed time. Nothing happened. And then...
Oh, yeah. This was almost as good as the Ming versus Barbarian.
Yes.
But it was Ming and Barbarian versus some guy.
It was Ming Barbarian versus a small rabbit.
So listen, it was Rick Steiner versus Vincent. And Rick and Scott were a great team. Two tough guys, two amateurs. But whenever you watch their matches, you always thought, well, Scott's the crazy one, the scary one. Rick is the friendly... I mean, he looks scary and all, but he's the friendly guy.
He was the goofy guy doing the barking dog gimmick.
He barks, he runs around, he does some moves.
Scott was always more serious.
Yeah, you'd never mess with him. But of the two of them, you figure, well, if one of them was going to kill me, it'd be Scott. That all changed on this show.
Not on this night, no.
Rick Steiner was mad. And they gave him, they fed him Vincent. I'm pretty sure Rick tried to kill him. He beat the absolute shit out of him. He did all of the put your knee on the guy's face.
Yes. My absolute favorite was foot on throat while slapping his face.
It was so awesome. He did my favorite, which is the middle rope belly to belly, where when you do middle rope belly to belly, just for the other guy's safety, you put him on the top rope and you make sure his legs are outside.
Yes.
so that maybe he can push off the top turnbuckle or whatever. His legs,
just so the ropes won't get in his way.
Yeah, the legs aren't going to get stuck in the way. Rick doesn't do that. He sits the guy on the top rope. The guy's legs are inside. He climbs up there. He grabs him, and he just fucking irks him into the atmosphere. Nearly kills this guy, and then goes down, and he puts his knee on his face and pins him.
Yep.
This had to be my favorite squash in at least a few years.
How is this
now.
Not more famous?
I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea. Because later there was stuff like Chris Benoit versus David Flair.
That was better.
And Ultimo Dragon versus, what was his name?
Was it Hayashi?
No.
I saw that.
I think it was Tokyo Magnum.
So one of those guys,
one of his students, one he just massacred. These were the two greatest squashes. And then there was Kurt Angle and Roderick Strong in TNA. Right. These are all...
No, that was on SmackDown.
SmackDown. Yeah. I remember all these off the top of my head. But anyway...
But this is
Rick Steiner Vincent squash should have been legendary.
This is not a squash match. That's something you see in professional wrestling shows.
Right.
This was a snuff film.
Yeah.
This was one man murdering another for my enjoyment.
This was the best minute 34 seconds I have seen all week.
All I could watch this whole time thinking this was, you know, I've probably seen 1,000 times Rick Steiner come out and pretend to beat somebody up.
Right.
But for every time he has pretended to beat somebody up for money in front of a camera, there's probably 10 times where he really beat somebody up for free backstage or in a bar or something.
Sure.
Scary Mofo was great.
Then the show ground to a halt.
The last note, by the way, the whole story is that Rick is heartbroken and is taking out his pain on Vincent and destroys him and kills him and kills him and kills him, and he gets the win, and the ref raises his hand, and Rick's looking down at him still almost crying, and then his music starts. It's the story of two brothers, Rick and Scott. Just rub it in. Just rub it in. Okay, yes. Yeah, so then the show... God. Yuji Nagata versus Saturn.
Boring.
They kicked each other. They suplexed each other. They used a lot of holds. At no point during this match did any fan care about anything, and so they just kept going.
They worked really hard, but nobody cared.
No.
They wrestled forever. The crowd chanted boring. Saturn finally won. This was bad.
They did mention Rick Martel's knee injury at the pay-per-view, which I believe was a career ender.
I came back for one more match and
no.
got hurt again in that match. Then his career.
I see. Oops. Close. Renegade versus Booker T.
Now, boring.
It was. I only noticed this because I watched the two shows back to back. Is it just me, or did they edit in Mark Mero's music for Renegade?
I don't know.
And if so, why?
Who knows? Who cares?
Even more perplexing, they brought in the Renegade to be a knockoff of the Ultimate Warrior, but now they brought him back after months and months and months, and he's Tatanka.
Basically, yes.
Can we move on? This match sucked.
This match sucked. Renegade was no good. God bless the guy. Booker missed a kick, then hit a kick and won.
Conan and Liz Mark Jr.
This match
boring.
Sucked.
Dragged on and on and
I'm
on
quite
and
certain
on and on.
If I went back and kept track, that Liz Mark did at least two flips for every wrestling move in this match.
Well, it's two flips too many. It sucked. Conan won.
By the way, did we mention we're in a 3-hour Nitro now?
Oh, God.
3 hours we're watching Conan and Liz Mark Jr. with nothing at stake. Conan wins. Then he cut a promo. He said he was about it. Says Juventud is a loser. In fact, he's lost his mask. He's no longer Juventud Guerrera. He is now merely Anibal Gonzalez. And after burying this guy for losing and being a total dick, he sucks up to the crowd and says, Arriba la raza! So.
You know what's funny about this next match? It's Bagwell and Norton versus High Voltage. Mm-hmm. And in a vacuum, it was a pretty good match.
We are on the same wavelength. You're so tight.
But it followed these three boring matches, and I was like, please, either kill me or kill this match. Something.
I do not need to, after 5 straight hours of wrestling, watch a High Voltage match. I just don't need to.
You know what really hit me during this match? It's not even that the match was bad, but it's the same guys that we've been watching now for 2 years. Having the same matches in the same spot on the card every Monday night. Nobody's moving up the ladder.
Nope.
Everybody's in the exact same spot.
Yep.
It doesn't matter if it's good. I'm bored watching all these guys doing the same stuff every week.
They are running in place.
Yeah. Now, as noted, had this been in the first hour, I probably would have liked this a lot. This is four big scary men throwing each other around. That's what wrestling should be. They tried a double suplex on Norton. He tried to suplex them both. Sort of did it.
Yeah, because one of them didn't get hooked up right.
Didn't put his arm on top of Norton's head.
He just got his arm hanging down. Yeah. I'm like, what are you doing, numbskull? And then he gets dropped on his head because he wouldn't set up right.
Yes, the blonde chaos almost died on this show.
Yeah. And then they hit an elevated blockbuster for the win, and they were celebrating, and I said, you know, I gotta admit, they were a fantastic team. Vicious and delicious, I mean. Not High Voltage. Eddie Guerrero versus Disco Inferno.
Eddie Guerrero, awesome wrestler. Had a pretty good match with Disco Inferno.
Mm-hmm.
Why, in God's name, am I watching Eddie Guerrero versus Disco Inferno on this show?
All I could think
was... What was the point?
Had I been booking Nitro at this point, I think I'd have had Eddie wrestling about a half dozen times a week. Because he was awesome all the time. Was there a point to this? No. And both guys left the match in the exact same positions they were in. Eddie worked the knee for a bit. Hit a missile dropkick to the knee, which I just love whenever anyone does this. I'm going to climb up as high as I possibly can to kick you in the knee. Then he hit the frog splash and won. There you go. Now, literally this point, very close to 3 hours into the show, time for a J.J. Dillon Nick Patrick promo. Are you fucking kidding me?
How could J.J. Dillon be so awesome in the 80s and be so horrible in the
90s? Well, let's look at what he was working with. In the 80s, he was the manager of the Four Horsemen.
That is a valid
point,
Brian.
In their prime. Now he's out here ranting and raving with Nick Patrick about his refereeing job in a Hulk Hogan match.
Why is this even part of the show? Why? Referee interviews? Ever?
Well, Nick Patrick's a heck of an interview, though.
Shut up.
Brian, am I wrong?
He's a hell of a referee.
He's a heck of an interview.
Oh, an interview. He was fine. I'm over
this show.
Are
you sincerely saying that?
No, he cut an awesome promo last week.
All right. Greg really liked Nick Patrick's promo. I thought you were being sarcastic. I apologize.
No, last week, this week was eh. But last week, he cut an amazing promo.
Last week. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Regardless, I do apologize for stamping at you. That was rude.
It's fine, Vince.
So Patrick says, as long as my suspension and back pay is all cleared up, I'll go to direct this match. There's Brad Armstrong and Ric Flair.
Ah! Brad Armstrong, I've so turned heel on this guy, to steal a term.
There was nothing wrong with this match.
Dude, I'm over Brad Armstrong.
Right?
And then
a match on a scale of 1 to 10.
Brad Armstrong comes out here wearing an Armstrong curse shirt.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, first off, Bullet Bob had a hell of a career, and he was awesome.
Your brother.
And your brother's on the other show.
Main eventing.
And he totally had a better match than you tonight. With Hawk and Animal, which is not easy, they had a match. When you can't have an exciting match with Ric Flair, I don't know what to tell you. They had a boring match. He hit his side Russian leg sweep finish. Flair just kicks out. And then he kicks him in the balls and puts him in the figure four and wins. I was like, what?
I thought this match was good. I didn't have any problem with this match at all.
I'm about to snap at you.
I can't believe you're saying this. It was a good match.
Of the 1,000 Ric Flair matches I have seen, probably 900 were better
than
this.
That's fair.
I'd say 995.
Had a giant video package, showed him choke slamming dozens of men, and getting power bombed on his head by Kevin Nash. And he came out for a promo in a neck brace. He said Nash had been malicious and barbaric and tried to break his neck, but it didn't work. I'm going to get this hand on Kevin Nash. You can it's fine if the powerbomb is legal. I want Nash at 100%. I don't want any excuses so I can break him down.
Giant's hair was so pretty here.
It is a shame.
He combed it out and blow-dried it. I couldn't take my eyes off it.
So anyway, as I mentioned at the beginning of this show, Dave must have been in a great mood because he thought this was one of the best Nitros they'd ever produced. And he also said, and this was when I knew that he was in a good mood, he said that Bryan Adams came out for a promo, and the shocking thing was it was a good promo. What in the world show was he watching? Bryan Adams came out here and cut the most horrible promo. I can't say ever. That would be a lie. But let's be fair. This was up there. He rambled.
He started off good and then quickly lost steam.
Well, he started off good by noting that he was here to join the NWO, the greatest faction in wrestling.
Yeah.
I wish he would have said, I just came from the worst faction in wrestling, so I've upgraded. And then he just starts mumbling and rambling and talking about Brett, and finally Brett came out. The only good thing about this is Gene was in the ring to interview him, and as soon as Brett hit the ring, Gene does his, ah! And takes a bump and runs for his life.
So Brett basically says, I don't know why you have beef with me, but if you want to fight, we can fight now. So they did. Brett won. I liked when he pulled his shirt up and went full hockey fight mode. That was awesome. Puts him in the sharpshooter.
Yeah, he does. He does a shoot style hockey fight jersey punching in the gut gimmick, and then goes for the sharpshooter.
Yeah.
Because that's what you do.
Seen it many times in hockey fights.
Yeah. I'm gonna grab this guy's jersey and punch him in the guts, and then when he falls on the ice, I'm going to put him in that hold.
I'm going to wrap his legs, grapevine his legs, and turn him over. So Hennig runs out to get Brett. Flair runs out to get Hennig. Ric Flair is apparently a Jedi, because he missed a chop by 3 feet, and Kurt Hennig went flying.
He, like, did a full spin in the air for a chop.
That missed.
I like to think it's like the cats... Two of the cats hate the baby, and they literally are like Jedis. They have never been touched by this baby, ever. Like, they can be not paying any attention, and when the baby's an inch from them, they'll be out of there like that. They've never been touched. I'll take the cats, and I'll throw them right in front of the baby, and she's about to get them, and they're gone again. I think that...
this is not going
to
end well.
Hennig was like the cat, where Flair was about to get him, but he was gone. He leaped out of the way to avoid the chop.
So what you're saying is that Kurt Hennig is a better wrestler than the Headbangers, who couldn't do the same thing on Raw.
Yeah.
Right.
Lesson learned.
It's true. I'm not lying.
Ric Flair in trunks and a sweatshirt.
A little creepy.
Not a good look.
A little creepy. CM Punk wants to doing the same thing.
Craig needs to start watching this old NWA with Garvin wrestling jobbers, and they're both in their tighty whities. You ain't seen nothing, dude.
I forget if it was in the ring or backstage, but CM Punk was doing a promo, and he stopped in the middle to lift up a shirt and say, yes, I am wearing trunks under here. So anyway, Hart and Flair clear the ring. NWO leaves. Like a minute goes by, and Flair says, well, nothing else is going on. I guess I'll get a promo. He buries the NWO. He admits that Brett is the best there is, was, and will be. Says half.
Yes, he says he admits it because Brett beat Rick.
Yes.
And Rick presumed that he would brag about it.
Yes.
But instead, Brett put him over, and so now Rick's cool putting him over.
Yeah.
That was so logical.
Yes. Yeah. And respectful.
Two crazy egomaniacs.
Yes.
Found a way to like each other.
By saying good things about each other. So Brett challenges Hennig to a match at Uncensored. He's going to finish him once and for all. The main event was supposed to be Sting and Scott Hall. The NWO, except Hall, all comes out.
By the way, let's think about this for a second. In the opening segment, Hulk Hogan said it was going to be Hall versus Sting.
Mm-hmm.
He said that Hall was going to win the title and then hand it over to Hulk Hogan.
Right.
Correct.
So then they came up with this plan.
Right. Don't know.
Let's beat Sting up before the match and smash him, and we won't have a match for the title at all.
Yeah.
This was a very bad plan.
Bischoff cuts a long, boring promo, daring Sting to come out. And if Sting comes out by himself, we'll all leave.
So Sting. This moron. Sting, who has been fighting the NWO for well over a year now.
Yeah. Right.
They say, hey, Sting, if you come down to the ring all by yourself, the 19 of us in the ring, we'll all leave. And what does Sting do?
Okay,
I'll head down to the ring. What the hell? Stumbles down to the ring and gets his ass handed to him. Because he's an idiot.
Sting turned into Dick Murdoch for a second there.
No, he didn't.
No, it was bad timing for that comparison. Who's a good redneck yokel Sting would sound like? Phineas Godwin.
He turned into Phineas Godwin.
All right, there we go. Anyway, so Hogan's alone in the ring. I guess Sting's going to fight Hogan now. So another Sting appears behind the first Sting. Sting?
Eight feet tall Sting.
Sting turns around, sees his two tall doppelganger, says, guy dresses like me, he must be on my side.
Yeah.
And he turns his back to him. And the NWO attacks, he's fighting them, and the second Sting pulls off his mask, it's Scott Hall.
I can only presume that the reason Sting turned around was because Hall hadn't attacked him yet.
Right.
And he wanted to make sure that Hall was actually going to show up.
That could be.
And then when he saw him, he went back to what he was doing, but he looked like an idiot.
That could be.
He left the gorilla.
Although
Scott Hall was standing there with a cocktail. I'll see you out there. Yes, I'll see you out there.
Although, if the plan was to jump Sting from behind and not lull him into a false sense of security, why dress him up like Sting? Just send Scott Hall out there with a bat.
Because they had an idea.
So Sting's fighting with the NWO, and Scott Hall pulls out his baseball bat, and he says, I'm going to hit this fucker, Sting, with this bat. And he swings the bat, and it gets near Sting, and he pulls it back like it's bounced off. Sting shows no effect. Sting was not aware this bat had touched him at all. Just keeps on fighting. Hall says, uh-oh. Hits him a little bit harder. It leads to a long brawl in the ring. They're all beating up Sting. Savage shows up. They all beat up Savage. They write HH on Savage's chest in spray paint. Luger clears the ring with a chair. This show was so damn long.
And you would be remiss if you did not announce the debut of E. Harrison Leslie.
I forgot it twice on the show.
That's right.
I talked about it in the intro to tonight's show, how I forgot about it then. Yes. So the guy who had been hiding in the limo, which I did not connect these dots until hours later, was Brutus Beefcake with a beard and yeah. biker gear.
He's back again. He just won't go away.
Yeah. And the announcer's like, who's that guy with the beard?
How the show ended.
The announcers had no idea who it was.
Oh.
They didn't mention his name.
This is
they
the
didn't
big
call
secret.
Attention to it. There's like, hey.
Kind of.
Hey, oh, I can't wait till the big reveal next
there's
week.
There's a stranger in the ring.
Yeah.
Yikes.
He
came out.
Barber of late.
He came out and just stood there.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Just in the background.
What the hell do you want the guy to do?
Go sailing.
He can't do anything else.
He put a sleeper on.
He can't talk. He can't work.
No, he can do a sleeper
he
hold.
He can effectively stand there and
cut
be all
Savage's
hairy.
Hair.
Cut Savage's hair.
He was the barber.
He ain't cutting into his hair.
Can't sail either.
All right, everybody, dude. That's it. Hey, don't forget, if you're listening this Wednesday, it's the final day of our 1 month for $3.99 sale. Last chance. 1 month for $3.99, you get access to all of our shows. If you love the Brian and Vinny show, we have like 500 or 1,000 episodes. How many are we at? Somebody had a number once.
7, 8, I don't know.
I think it's 1,000.
Wow.
There's a lot. We've done shows dating all the way back to 2005. Observer Radio, Observers, Figure Four Weeklies, and Vinny puts his reports in every week.
Sure.
I think. I don't know what he does, but you can check it out. And also, if you go to my Twitter, at Brian Alvarez, you can grab your Retros t-shirt that Craig has put together.
Well done, Craig.
Thank you, sir.
As well as
Thanks,
the
Chris.
Number one best-selling shirt in the whole store, -5 stars. Which is going to come in very handy at WrestleMania this year. So head up there and check it out. And that's it, everybody. We'll talk to you again after a while.
Good night.
Bye.